Hello and welcome to the unfortunately season-ending version of the Providence Journal Pick and Pop podcast. This is Kevin McNamara at the Journal. I'm joined by my compatriot Bill Koch. The national championship game is over. Congrats to the North Carolina Tar Heels. The coaching carousel has spun through the East, if not the country. Players are declaring NBA draft, yes or no. Recruiting, of course, never ends. As usual, Bill, there's a lot to talk about here on the podcast.
And we say this is the end and the last edition of the Pick and Pop podcast. That's subject to change, obviously, pending any late developments, whether it be in recruiting or coaching changes or contract extensions or anything along those lines. It really has become a 365-day sport here in 2017. But the games are over for now, at least until November. And the last game, Kevin, sort of it had all the makings of being a really good one. And the way it played out wasn't necessarily as aesthetically pleasing as some people would have liked. But North Carolina, there's a lot to be said for being able to win when you don't play well. That means that you're a pretty good team. And I think North Carolina proved ultimately that they were the best and probably the toughest team in the NCAA this year.
Yeah, a few interesting themes on the national championship game. I find it interesting that the one-and-done programs, whether it's Kentucky or Duke, they've obviously done it the best for the last 6-7 years, whenever the one-and-done has been in existence, but they can't seem to win championships. You can produce players and be really, really big-time on NBA draft night, but you can't win titles. And we've seen that, saw that once again. One of the most veteran teams in the country, like Villanova last year, North Carolina this year. Kennedy Meeks, Isaiah Hicks, Justin Jackson, Theo Pinson, Nate Britt, Joel Berry. They've all played an awful lot of basketball for the Tar Heels. Heck, I think Providence saw them twice in the NCAA tournament. Some of those kids that they've seen twice in the last 4 years, and good for them that they could wrap up their careers with a national title. What's interesting is several of them, especially I would say Meeks and Hicks, and Justin Jackson really, they were recruited as potential one-and-dones, and you know, they just didn't pan out. What they did morph into is really good college players.
Now, in Gonzaga on the other side, you look at they went the transfer route. Jonathan Williams coming in from Missouri, Jordan Matthews, grad transfer from Cal, and Nigel Williams-Goss, who's from in-state Washington. They build the program a little differently. They had Szemek Karnowski, who's the mammoth center from Poland. Josh Perkins is really the only blue-chip guy in that group, that starting five, a four-star. And then coming off the bench, you have Zach Collins, who, you know, arguably, Kevin, I know we talked about this late Monday night, he might have been the best NBA prospect in that whole game. Only plays 14 minutes before fouling out. But showed a lot of potential here in this NCAA run. He could end up being a one-and-done guy, depending on what happens over the next couple weeks and whether or not he wants to explore the draft process. But I think you're really seeing here, and the tournament is trending towards this, now that there are no more high school entries into the NBA draft, this is becoming a game for men. 22, 23-year-old men, graduate transfers, four-year players. It's really reverting back to where it was maybe in the 70s and the 80s.
Yeah, and I actually, as a college fan of the college game, I find it refreshing. Obviously, we're still going to have groups that come in probably to a place like Kentucky and just worry about basketball because obviously school is not a focus in the one-and-done year.
Increasing the educational value of a degree from the University of Kentucky?
Oh, no. I actually applaud anyone who can graduate from the University of Kentucky. I have little feeling for someone who does a semester and a half at the University of Kentucky.
Very good.
If you can graduate in 4 years or five or six at Kentucky, God bless you. I hope you make a lot of money in your chosen career. But at One and Done U down there in Lexington, they put guys deep in the NCAA tournament, maybe even the Final Four. But I know Kentucky fans, and it's interesting. They've been brainwashed to believing that this is great, where different standards are always applied. When it was Rick Pitino or Joe Hall or anyone. It was national championships is really what Kentucky fans wanted. And, you know, Coach Cal's in the Hall of Fame. He has one national title.
Yeah, right. They've sort of modeled themselves into the NBA prep school. You know, John Calipari was kind of at the forefront of this. I think he probably got it a little earlier than just about every other coach, and that turned into that one national title. You know, but as we've talked about on the podcast since we started, when you're playing with freshmen, you don't know what's going to happen at the end of games. You know, they played a classic with North Carolina in this tournament. Malik Monk makes a three late in the game to put Kentucky ahead. It looked like they were headed to advance, and then Luke May makes a shot for North Carolina at the buzzer. You know, one of the best games in the whole tournament, in my mind. You know, and that those sorts of things happen. That's how thin the margin is between surviving and advancing or going home in this tournament.
And, you know, you just mentioned someone who maybe the most confounding player who emerged in the tournament was this Luke May. Well, Luke is a former walk-on. To his credit, he played great in the, I think it was the South Regional. I mean, really, really well. Hit the winning shot. He frustrated Kentucky the entire game. He was good in the regional semifinal game, a non-factor in the Final Four. Both games, not only the semifinal game against Oregon, but also the national title game against Gonzaga, where he didn't score and had two rebounds in 10 minutes. And I don't know why, except maybe it's just matchups. You know, the matchups in those two games said, okay, you're a average playing big guy. We're going to put somebody good on you and make you look like a walk-on again.
You know, and Luke May is an interesting case study here. He's a North Carolina kid who Davidson wanted desperately, who you could see being a very good player at the Atlantic 10 level, and probably a guy who could hurt a Power 5 team were they to play in the NCAA tournament. And he's been playing 25, 30 minutes a night and developing under a coach like Bob McKillop. But instead, he decided to go to the big in-state name brand. And now he's won himself a national championship. And it would be interesting, and I think we already know the answer to this, to ask him, would you rather go to Carolina, play 5-10 minutes a game, not really contribute that much, and win a national title, or go to Davidson, be the man, you know, maybe like Peyton Aldridge or somebody along those lines, and not really win much of anything on the national scale?
Yeah, and my guess is it's column A, as they say,
right?
Because, you know, obviously, what a great experience to go to multiple Final Fours and win a national title. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how quickly Carolina rebuilds. There was an awful lot of negative press in the last week to 10 days about North Carolina because of the NCAA investigation that continues to hang over the program.
And it's deserved, Kevin.
It's totally deserved.
We need to get that on the record here. It is deserved.
Yeah, to the NCAA's credit, it looked like that they were going to let them off maybe a year, 15 months ago, and that does not look like the case now. And, you know, if Carolina has to give up the, was it 2008 national title, if they have to trade 2008 for 2017, good for them, you know. They went out in the end, but, you know, we'll see how quickly Carolina can get back on its feet because they will lose some pretty important players. And what's interesting is, some of the really good juniors on their team, there's not a lot of, and they just won the national title, there's not a lot of NBA buzz about them. In this day and age, if you're not a freshman or a really elite player, upperclassman, the NBA really doesn't have much interest in you. And, you know, sad but true.
No, these guys are in love with potential more so than performance. You know, all the talk you hear about in the draft is upside. Who has the most upside? Who can grow the most in terms of their skills, in terms of their body? They don't want anyone who's a finished product. They want someone who they feel like can develop into something. You know, and that leads into a discussion about local draft products here.
Yeah.
With Rodney Bullock, Providence's forward, declaring himself eligible for the NBA draft. And he is not signing with an agent. That's an important distinction to note. You know, that means that he can reverse course by the June 12th deadline and come back to school. You know, but a lot of folks in the day or two after said, well, Rodney's not ready. He's not ready for the NBA. Here's a newsflash, folks. They don't draft guys who are quote-unquote ready. Mm-hmm. They draft guys 75% of the time who are projects, who can't play in an NBA game. but they are looking to have those players in their systems 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, eating their food, lifting their weights, going through their practices. They don't want them in a college program.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, they also changed the NBA draft system, the run-up, last year, in that if you don't sign with an agent, teams can now pay to fly you to their cities for workouts. And I think that's really the tack that someone like a Rodney Bullock is taking, is he wants to be assessed. He wants a full scouting report by the professionals. Tell him what he needs to work on. I mean, if he thinks he's an NBA player right now, he's going to get a rude awakening, because no scout that I've talked to, come across, has said that. But the system does allow someone like Rodney Bullock, someone like Justin Jackson at North Carolina, who's a junior. He just scored 16 points in the national title game. If he doesn't assess where he is with the NBA, he's foolish. I mean, this is what the NBA wanted and the NCAA wanted. Now, does it leave someone like Roy Williams and Ed Cooley in a tough spot? Yes, it does. But guess what? Those guys will survive.
Nope. That's why they make the big bucks, to evaluate more talent, to have contingency plans in place. But this is a smart decision by Rodney Bullock. You've got to remember that by the time they throw the ball up on the next season at Providence, he's going to be 23 years old.
And a college graduate.
Right.
He's due to graduate in May.
Right, which is, you know, that's a significant age. When you look at someone like Karl Anthony Towns, who plays for the Minnesota Timberwolves, I would imagine a lot of PC fans have watched quite a bit of them this year because Chris Dunn is there. Karl Anthony Towns was younger than all 10 starters in the national championship game on Monday night. And he's already a monster in the NBA. Now he's the gold standard in terms of guys who develop quickly and who turn into a superstar right away. But he wasn't quote unquote ready when he came out of Kentucky and went to the league after just 1 year. He's a guy who's worked himself into a great player in the league. And, you know, you look at someone like Bullock, who's 23, you know, an NBA GM will watch him in a workout and say, is he maxed out already? Is there more in that body? Is he going to be able to develop his skill set or his body to the point where maybe he can do two or three more things on the floor? And that's the purpose of these workouts, to for him to be evaluated in front of these folks and for him to get honest feedback from them.
And obviously his presence in Providence next year is vital to the well-being of the Friars and their chances to get back to the NCAA tournament again. But right now, this is the I like to say that these first 2-3 weeks after the end of a season, whenever it ends, it's the only time where the player can think about himself. And again, I like you, I have no problem with Rodney doing this. I'll be curious to see what the final decision is in June. And guys do make bad decisions. We've seen it over and over again, where someone stays in the draft and doesn't get drafted. It happens, waves of kids every year. And, hopefully that's not the case with Bullock. But then again, hopefully he does get drafted. But, no scout that I've talked to has said that that's possible right now.
The other thing that happens after the season is you have a very honest, frank discussion between coaches and players. There are exit interviews. It's one-on-one generally in an office. And in Providence's case, you have two players who have decided that they're going to try to find their college futures elsewhere. And that's Ryan Fizikas and Ricky Council, who both decided to transfer from the program. That's not to say, I want to be very clear, that's not to say that Ed Cooley asked either player to leave, because I don't know that for a fact. I certainly don't. But when you get into those discussions, there's certainly communication between the two sides about how the coach sees your role going forward and how much he thinks you're going to play, whether or not you could be a starter at some point, whether or not you play major minutes off the bench. And I would imagine that in the case of both Fizikas and Council, they decided that their chances would be a little greater elsewhere.
Yeah, I can weigh in a little bit on that. I kind of find it to believe that they wanted Fizikas to stay around. They thought that he brings something off the bench that really they don't have.
He's a shooter.
Now, has he shot well for 2 years? No. But, he'd be obviously a more experienced, more seasoned player the next 2 years. Now, could they guarantee him, extra shots and more minutes? No. And that is that frank conversation that Bill alluded to. Where Ricky Council is a different story. He clearly was not in their plans, was not playing at all for 2 years in a row. They have players at his position. Clearly, they didn't have a potential role for him next year. Where Fizikas, I think they did, to the point where they're going to try to fill his spot. Providence does have some flexibility now. They're not going to save both of those spots for 2018. They definitely want to bring in a guard or a wing guy who can score. My guess is they'll look hard at the freshman class. They just lost out on a recruit this week. Greg Elliott from Detroit ended up going to Marquette. Elliott had visited Providence late in the year. I think that they could pursue some options on the graduate transfer wire. And I know that down in Kingston, they're looking to do the same thing.
Yeah, that's something that generally doesn't play itself out until, you know, April and May, when you get a sense of who's going to graduate and when. You know, there was a report yesterday that Rhode Island is going to host Chris Lane as a graduate transfer out of Longwood. You know, he's due to visit Pittsburgh this weekend and Rhode Island next weekend. That's according to John Rothstein at FanRag Sports. You know, Chris Lane is the type of guy who Rhode Island could plug right into the lineup and play right away. He's 6'7". He averaged 17 points a game and 7 rebounds a game at Longwood this year. You know, type of physical guy who you put next to Cyril Langevin, he bolsters your front court, and away you go, because you bring back, you know, 4 senior guards and guys who are experienced, guys who are tough, you know, guys who are the backbone of an A-10 championship team, a team that won a game in the NCAA tournament. And this is where Rhode Island is going to be active with the one remaining scholarship they have. They want a player who's going to be able to come in and make a difference right away and play for them, because I'm sure Dan Hurley looks at his roster and thinks, if I can just replace Karan Iverson, I've already got Cyril Langevin. He played very well down the stretch. If he can give me 85% of what Hassan Martin did, I just need to find Karan Iverson's minutes, and I'm going to be very good, probably the Atlantic 10 favorites again next season.
Yeah, or really a combo, you know, forward. If it's a big forward who can rebound to some degree and help a Langevin and yet be able to make some shots, like an Iverson, that would be perfect. But obviously those guys don't grow on trees.
That's right.
And those guys will be recruited at a high level because, of, as we saw with Gonzaga and many teams who had deep NCAA tournament runs, that is the instant offense, instant addition to a program that really everyone from the highest end programs around the country are looking for. So wouldn't shock me if this kid Lane, who I understand is visiting Pittsburgh, as you mentioned, isn't a very hot commodity, and he wouldn't be the only one. That's how it works in this day and age. We're going to bounce around a few different things. Just to stick with the URI a little bit, I know that there had been some reports both from us and from some national media about Dan Hurley talking with URI about an extension. He's had multiple extensions in his 5 years at URI, and Bill, obviously he's been talking with Thorbjorn and Dave Dooley since the season ended.
And they are negotiating. There is no urgency here. Dan is the coach at URI. He has worked very hard to build the program to where it is in cooperation with Thorbjorn and David Dooley. Through his 5 years here, he's built it into a championship-caliber enterprise. You know, a team that won the A-10, that won an NCAA tournament game, that brings back a considerable amount of talent next year. You know, it's sort of time for Dan to maybe sit back and enjoy the fruits of his labor a little bit. You know, but that's not to say that he doesn't want to advance forward. And I think a lot of these contract discussions, I don't have any specifics on them, but I wrote a piece for the Journal a couple weeks ago about if I was Dan Hurley, what I would want. You know, and that certainly includes, at minimum, charter flights to every road game where I actually have to fly. You know, increased budget for my assistant coaches. You know, and I'd also want assurances that, you know, maybe I couldn't get into a contract, but, you know, maybe that Thorbjorn could work on at a department level. I'd want to beef up my fundraising staff, my marketing staff. I want more cash on hand for the program. I want more fans in my building. I want more buzz in the state and in the region about my program. And a lot of those things have to be done at department level.
I'm going to interrupt there for a minute. A lot of these things they're not Dan Hurley's job. You know, his job is to recruit, retain good players and win games, coach. Obviously, a college head coach right now is more of a CEO than just a coach. He has a lot of duties, but I think Rhode Island has kind of lacked in some of the areas that Bill talked about. And to Hurley's credit, this is where his push seems to be.
Right. He's not looking for more salary for himself. He wants to set up the job, the program, the institution for success, so that actually his job, you know, if you drill right down to his job, recruiting players, developing players, winning games, is all the easier, and he could do it at an even higher level than he's doing it right now. But that requires administrative and institutional support, and there's been a constant push from Dan and from Thor to try and get that sort of support. And, you know, they've referred to it, both of them independently, as a partnership. You know, and they're unselfish guys who are trying to drive this thing forward together. So the fact that that extension, if there is one, if they have reached an agreement, the fact that it hasn't been signed yet, there's no reason for hand-wringing there. They're just looking to get this thing set up to a position where they can achieve at a high, high level.
And my guess is, you know, those talks will be resolved in the next couple of weeks, and we may hear something out of Kingston, maybe even as soon as this week. You never can tell. I know that Hurley did not go to the Final Four. I talked to him. I said, "Danny, are you coming out to Phoenix?" He's like, "That's where Bobby lives. I see Bobby plenty. I'm all set."
Right.
That's cool.
That's about right.
Yeah, yeah.
That's about right.
Dan Hurley doesn't seem to me to be the work the hotel lobby type of guy anyway, so that's he can get more done in Kingston.
No, he's a no-frills type, but the coaching carousel did spin in some other places.
Yeah, and, you know, this is we'll start with the one that Dan's name was mentioned. I don't think he was ever contacted, and I don't know how many people were contacted at Georgetown. You know, there were a lot of names thrown right out of the book at Georgetown. One of the ones right away was Patrick Ewing, and that's who got the job. It took 10 days for them to resolve their search, but Ewing was introduced on Wednesday, and I see this as a gamble, Bill. You know, I get the whole Patrick Ewing and Georgetown thing. It sounds good. It is a home run press conference, and to his credit, he has been a coach. He's been a coach for 15 years in the NBA. His spoken goal was to be an NBA head coach. He said today the only college job he would ever consider was Georgetown because, again, he wanted to be an NBA head coach. But this is a different can of fish, as they say, and everything revolves around who he hires on his staff. But, you know, kids today don't know who Patrick Ewing is, which is maybe amazing. Their parents do, and recruiting, obviously, recruiting parents is really important. But, you know, we've seen NBA greats dip into the college ranks, and it's a different ball of wax.
It said very loudly and clearly to me that Big John Thompson is still very much in charge up on the Hilltop.
He's standing in the back of the room.
Looming over the scene. It says to me very clearly that Big John went to the administration and said, "If you're going to fire my son, you're going to hire one of my former players." And really the only candidate that you were going to find was Patrick Ewing. A couple of names that came out early were Shaka Smart, who's at Texas, who was a head coach at VCU before that, knows the area very well, and Mike Bray, Notre Dame, you know, DeMatha product, DC product. Both of those would have been home run hires, the type of guys who Georgetown should go after, frankly.
No question.
You know, because nothing ventured, nothing gained, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
The third name that you heard was Chris Mack at Xavier. You know, another guy in conference, you know, who the rumor out there was that Georgetown was looking to make him a big offer, give him a big raise, and come in. Now, Chris Mack is an excellent coach. He also happens to be a Xavier graduate. You know, so it would take a pretty serious job to lure him away. You know, in my mind, something along the lines of maybe Ohio State, maybe North Carolina even, once Roy Williams decides to retire. It's a limited amount of jobs that Chris Mack would move to, in my mind, and you could say the same about, you know, someone who I thought would have been an ideal candidate for Georgetown, and that was Ed Cooley.
Yeah, no, there's no question. I think what Georgetown looked at right out of the gate was, let's make a home run, and Shaka Smart was the perfect fit because he did have some deep roots down there in D.C. But then, you know, if they were really only limited themselves to a minority, Ed Cooley's in that mix, and I wrote something before the Final Four last week where Ed said, you know, he had no interest in Georgetown, and he's at Providence, but, you know, it's very simple that his phone rings a lot because he is one of the most accomplished minority coaches in America right now. Four straight NCAA tournaments, recruiting at a high level, winning at a place that some people said you couldn't win at. And obviously a high profile, you know, a league like the Big East, people know who Ed is. Push came to shove, there's no way Georgetown was going to take Providence's coach. And they weren't going to take Xavier's coach either. I have a hard time believing that conversation even came up on the Xavier side. My guess is that, you know, like you said, Bill, they look for Shaka Smart, look for Mike Bray, and said, hey, let's dig a little deeper on Patrick a little bit and see if it could work out. And he said today that, you know, he had a lot of conversations with a lot of people involved at the school, and after one, he thought that he wasn't going to get the job. Called Big John and said, I don't think it's going to happen. So it was not a slam dunk, although in the end, it's certainly one that makes sense.
It also has to be said that I don't think there was any chance Ed Cooley was going to go to Georgetown either. You know, that makes him a pariah in his hometown of Providence, which, you know, you could never see.
A little tough to come back to the dunk?
I think a little bit. And you could never see someone like Ed Cooley stabbing Providence in the back like that. You know, he is this city through and through. He has revamped this program completely with the help of Bob Driscoll, his athletic director, and Father Shanley, Providence's president. Those three work in lockstep. They have a really good thing going right now. You know, and I had a couple friends who said, well, why wouldn't Ed consider Georgetown or another job? And I said, Ed gets everything he wants at Providence. The administration there hasn't said no to him. He's paid very well. He's going to have a practice facility soon. They travel in whatever manner they would like to. He's able to recruit at a high level, a level that will only continue to rise once that practice facility is done. You know, Ed is in a similar situation to Chris Mack in that it's going to take a North Carolina or a Kentucky or a real blue blood to come along to potentially lure him away from Providence, if at all. You know, and that would also require something on Ed's behalf as well, which would be to win a couple more games in the NCAA tournament. You know, maybe make a second weekend, maybe make an Elite Eight. That would make him a much more attractive candidate to jobs like that.
I don't think that's a maybe. I think if, you know, he's going to become the next coach at, you know, at North Carolina, North Carolina is going to be able to take a proven winner, whether it's, you know, Mark Few.
Yeah, the names you hear there are like Sean Miller.
Yeah, very highest level.
Chris Mack, Mark Few.
Yeah. Before we wrap up, a very busy carousel in the A-10 with the two you know, best programs in the league, VCU and Dayton, at the very top. Really, it's a very important time for the A-10. They made some interesting hires. You could go back and forth on a few of them. But they really need to make sure that things work out well at Dayton and VCU.
Well, Dayton went a little safe, I think, with an alum, Anthony Grant, who played for the Flyers in the 80s. Coached at VCU, actually, when they were in the Colonial. Then jumped to Alabama, to the SEC. Got paid like every other coach at VCU has. Will Wade followed the same track. He signed with LSU, which was a little bit of a surprise after 2 years. But Anthony Grant goes back to Dayton. Archie Miller took the job at Indiana. That's really a no-brainer. Both sides handle it in a very classy manner, Archie and the administration at Dayton. No real surprise there. You know, and Anthony Grant's made three NCAA tournaments, two at VCU and one at Alabama. He was an assistant with the Oklahoma City Thunder most recently under Billy Donovan. They have mutual ties dating back to Florida. You know, so Anthony Grant, we'll see. You know, he's a proven winner at the college level, and he inherits great program machinery at Dayton.
Although they will lose the bulk of their team. It's not as if he's walking into a loaded deck. They did have some transfers sitting out, so they'll be competitive. But again, I don't see them being picked at the top of the league. I do see Rhode Island ahead of Dayton right now. Well, again, a lot of moving parts in the college basketball roster world in the next several months, but you know, Anthony's got some work to do.
It's a similar situation at VCU. They brought back Mike Rhodes, who was an assistant coach under Shaka Smart. Rhodes was at Rice for three seasons as a head coach. Made the CBI this year, which, you know, a lot of folks would look and say, "Well, that's not very impressive." Well, he's coaching at Rice. It's a very difficult job, you know. But Rhodes has deep ties in the Mid-Atlantic. He was actually head coach of Randolph-Macon before he joined Shaka's staff at VCU. And, you know, I think the biggest thing for Rhodes will be, you know, it's a similar challenge to Grant. He's losing a significant amount of talent. He's already lost two four-star recruits, LeVar Batts, who was flipped to NC State, and Mayan Keir, who is another four-star player who's requested his release. But VCU is another place that has great machinery in place in terms of $25 million practice facility, seven straight years in the NCAA tournament. They'll be able to bring in players, replacements, in short order, you would imagine. But the fact that the conference's two marquee jobs flipped opens the door for Rhode Island, and I think that's what made it, you know, that much more enticing for Dan Hurley to stay, and it also makes it that much more urgent for URI to stake its place atop the league.
Two more jobs opened and flipped in the A-10 with both UMass and Duquesne. UMass had a strange situation with Pat Kelsey from Winthrop accepting the job, then going to Amherst and not liking what he saw and reversing course. We don't see that very many times in college coaching. And instead, they hit the Billy Donovan coaching tree with Matt McCall, who everyone says is a great hire. He might not have, you know, Eastern New England ties, and who knows how long he'll stay at UMass, but good for UMass. They have someone who they think can win games, and that's what this is all about.
Matt McCall, very sharp guy, spent the last 2 years at Chattanooga, made the NCAA tournament in 2015. He won 48 games in 2 years there. Second time that the A-10 has poached Chattanooga's coach. Previously, it was Will Wade, who went to VCU. But you look at UMass and the situation that happened there with Pat Kelsey making the U-turn like he did. They were in full scramble mode there for about a week, and did reasonably well. The land Matt McCall, there is talent in Amherst if he's able to keep it together. They had an excellent freshman class this past year, and you wonder, you know, how quickly he's going to be able to get that roster on the same page. If he can, then UMass is poised to jump right back into the top half of the league.
Now, the final job that opened was Duquesne. The Dukes have struggled forever, and they decided to go sign Akron's Keith Dambrot, pay him $1 million for 6 or 7 years, and really roll the dice there and throw some money at the program that badly needed an injection of money. We'll see. I have a hard time believing that Duquesne can get it going, but again, we'll see. Hopefully their roster is a little bit more stable than it's been the last several years. But Bill, I trust that this is not the last Pick and Pop podcast. It's just a feeling that I have deep inside my gut.
I hope the same.
Okay. Take care.